Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Jack Thurston, and you're listening to the Wheel Suckers podcast.
Hi friends, I'm Alex and I look after social media marketing and events at Look Mum No Hands, and I'm joined by my stalker.
I'm Jack Thurston and you're listening to The Bike Show.
No, sorry, it's meant to be Jenny. I'm joined by Jenny. Sorry, I'm late.
Well, but this is the Bike Show podcast.
Oh, I thought this is the Wheel Suckers podcast.
I don't think so. This is the Bike Show.
Well, why don't we record together?
I don't know about that. What's going to happen?
I don't know. We have stuff in common, don't we?
What, we're both podcasts about bikes and people who ride bikes?
Oh my God, we do a podcast about bikes and you do a podcast
about
bikes.
Should we do this together?
It could work.
Let's do this together.
Let's try this.
Let's ride this trandom. No, what is a triple tandem?
It's a trandom.
Trandom?
Yeah. This
triple
is a terrible
tandem.
Triple podcast. We're joined by our friend. He's now our friend. We're joined by our friend Jack.
Well, it's great to be here on the Wheel Suckers podcast, and welcome to all the listeners to the Bike Show too. The Wheel Suckers podcast is the younger, more attractive, funnier version of the Bike Show, and more female version of the Bike Show.
Which is better generally? It's fine. You don't need to spell it out.
On every criterion, you do exceed.
So, what do you do, Jack, for our listeners that maybe don't know?
Well, I started presenting The Bike Show when it was a radio show before there were podcasts, back in 2004 on an art radio station in London called Resonance FM, which is still going.
Cool.
And 200 episodes later, I am living in the Black Mountains in Southeast Wales and have a sideline in cycle touring guidebooks, which is why I'm here today in London, because I'm going to be at Look Mum No Hands in about an hour, drinking beer and trying to flog a few copies of my book, which is about cycling in the West Country. So maybe we can talk about that later. But yeah, the Bike Show is kind of like, it's about everything to do with cycling, especially not racing cycling. If you delve back into the archives of, you know, all these hundreds of shows, you'll find Dunwich Dynamo in 2005.
I listened to something about Sturmey Archer Hubs.
Sturmey Archer
that was
Hubs.
Good.
We had an interview with Sheldon Brown before he died.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
RIP.
So it's kind of like there are actually quite a number of people who I've interviewed on the Bike Show who are now dead. So it's
that is a statement. Is that a sign?
If you keep going for long enough, you'll find the same thing happens to your guests.
Okay. Death comes for us all, friends.
But Jenny, tell the few Bike Show listeners who don't know who you are, tell them about you.
Yes, I didn't introduce myself at the beginning. I am the director of the London Bike Kitchen. We're a do-it-together bike workshop in Hackney, and we teach people how to fix their own bikes. And I wrote a book last year called How to Build a Bike.
I used to work around the corner from the 56A bike
in Elephant
thing
Castle.
In Elephant Castle.
Yeah.
And that is that kind of the same sort of idea?
Yeah.
Of basically you come and fix your
same
own
vibe,
bike?
But we monetized it because we need to pay for our overheads. And we pay our staff a living wage. Even myself now, including a living wage. This is amazing. So the idea is that people can come in and learn from us how to fix all sorts of things. So we do a whole spectrum of classes from introduction to maintenance, stuff on, we just introduced a hydraulic disc brake class. We are also doing wheel building and build your own bike classes. So we're trying to build up people's skills around their bicycle with the idea, the main goal is getting people to ride their bike more. Hashtag more butts on bikes.
Yeah.
We just want people to ride their bikes more. And so we're taking away the fear that's kind of surrounding a bike when something goes wrong.
There is a lot of fear. It's something that I think about a lot, because if you drive a car, which I do, as well as ride bikes, you're never expected to fix your car, are you? That's not part of the deal. Basically, cars never go wrong, really, almost never go wrong, compared to bikes. And when they do, the idea is you just take them to be fixed.
And get ripped off.
And I guess, yeah, it costs a hell of a lot of money. No,
yeah.
Tell me about it. You could buy a new bike every time you take your car in to be fixed. But it does worry me that I get my hands filthy, like, on a bike ride, and I have to fix a puncture or do something to it. And it's like, haven't they sorted this out yet? Why do I have to do this? So I've got great hopes for things like, I don't know.
Electronic brakes.
Electronic shifting, for sure. Belt drive.
Hub gears.
Because, you know, you shouldn't have to be kind of fixing your bike on one level. But on the other level, it's incredibly interesting and kind of rewarding thing to do.
And empowering.
And empowering.
Yeah.
I don't want to use that word, but that's the word I'm going to use. Yeah.
I was thinking the other day, I was like, I ride a machine. You know, and you're like, love machines and technology, and bikes are that, really.
Yeah,
they're gears and stuff going around. And it's kind of really cool when you start to demystify what all the parts are. And that's what I think Jenny's workshops, Jenny's space, does really well. Because it's very easy to look at a bike, as I've been learning parts, and you're like, it almost looks blurry because you just can't even take it in. Actually, it's really interesting, that link I sent you today, there's this test website where you can test products out.
Oh, that's terrible.
And someone I know linked it to me, because I get this all the time. I don't know if you guys do, especially like with Christmas, where it's like,
yeah,
you like bikes, you get bike shit. So I get all the links to the fucking cruddy bike
all the bike presents. I'm
you
like,
know,
you guys
Alex,
like
you'd love
bike.
This.
Oh, well, because it's got a little embossed logo.
Yeah. And I got sent this one that was, test this lady's bike and keep it. And the photograph, the brake pads weren't even like aligned on the rim.
There were no brake levers.
And then there were no levers and no
They need
cables.
To be aligned on the rim, do they?
So they're like...
Is that like part of... Will I learn that by reading your book?
That's in the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was this thing where I was
Learning
like...
already.
Someone else had sent it to me, and obviously they couldn't see that because they just
don't know.
Yeah.
It's like those... have you seen the drawings that people do where someone's asked them to draw a bike and then they do it, and then it's like, it's totally...
The
cranks are in the wrong spot, or it doesn't have a down tube, but people don't know. It's not part of their...
The best is when that's the person who's just drawn the bicycle on the bike lane.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love those bikes.
Oh, God.
You try riding that.
Yeah,
the wheels are kind of completely oval. And they're never going to go round. So your book is about someone who basically, it's like, it looks like you've got a strong leaning towards lugged steel. It's not a lot of carbon fibre in here. Or is it but the idea that if you like had a bike or found a bike frame in a skip,
yeah,
and you could turn it into a bike that you could ride
turn
with minimal...
Turn into single speed. So there's no gears in this book.
Okay.
And the idea was you're taking a racer from the 60s, 70s, 80s, vintage steel kind of frame.
And downcycling it.
Yes, exactly.
Get rid of the gears.
Yeah,
get rid
it makes
of the brakes.
It so much easier. You don't need
get rid of the handlebars. Handlebar tape.
It's actually a book about unicycles.
Yeah, ride it till the rims fall off.
The simplest form of a ride.
Yeah, you want to come?
You guys, unicycles are the future.
Oh
my God.
So hipster. That's going to be the peak. I did see one at Victoria Park the other day, and I nearly threw up. I hate them.
And then you get the giants in the touring unicycles.
What?
They exist. Touring unicycles. Yes.
What?
There's like handlebar kind of thing on it where you can put your bags and like...
Please.
There's that guy, Joff, something or other Joff, who's been recycling around the world, unicycling around the world. And yeah, he's got panniers.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Actually, I think I had him on the bike show. Did I?
You've had a unicyclist.
Like with panniers, and but it was good. I mean, have you ever ridden a tall bike?
Yes,
no.
I cried the entire time. I couldn't get off, so I just had to keep riding it. And then I went to grab onto a pole and I kind of got it wrong and then I like slid down it. And I was like,
yeah. But once you're up, it's quite hard to get up onto it.
Yep.
But once you're up, it's remarkably stable and you get so many smiles.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
The only
people
thing
like give way and
yeah,
they say
it,
hi.
Yeah.
And you're like, why can't you do this when I'm on
yeah.
a regular bike?
Yeah. The only thing that's come close is cycling with my kids on the bike, which I've done because they're sort of still small enough to be able to go on my bike now, 2 and 4. And cycling around town in where I live in Abergavenny, I get so many smiles and people coming up to saying, oh, that looks so nice, they look so happy, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, why can't you be like that to all people?
All cyclists.
Yeah.
You look so happy, and you'd be like, oh, not always.
Do you have, like, one kid on the front, one kid on the back?
Well, I did that when I had the elephant bike, which is those post office bikes that have
yeah.
been
oh,
okay.
Yes.
reconditioned, and they're sending them. You buy one, and then the money that you pay sends one to Malawi
oh, cool.
to a social enterprise
oh,
there where they get used by people who need transport, local transport, to get around with their businesses. And but they're the old Pashley Pronto kind of mail bikes. When the
nice.
Royal Mail decided they didn't want to have bikes, they just gave them to this social enterprise. Anyway, so I had one on the front, on handlebars, and one on the back. But then my daughter got too big and heavy for the front. So now we have got an amazing like electric long tail. So there's extra cycle, make a long tail with
cool.
26-inch wheel at the front, 20-inch wheel at the back. So the kids go on a big, long platform at the back. And, yeah, we get a lot of
thumbs up.
Is
it a little bench? That's
yeah, it's like a long...
Oh,
well, not, they
so
don't sit side saddle, they just kind of astride it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's got these little hoops that go around the side that they can hang on to, so
oh,
they can
cool.
turn around. And you can fit three on the back
that
there.
That is awesome.
Wow, I
so
want to go
good.
On one of those. Yeah.
Ride me
around, Jenny.
I want kids just so I can stick them on a bike.
Well, I saw that thing, that cargo bike taxi.
Pedal Me
yeah.
rules.
Just around the corner.
Yeah, we love Pedal Me.
Yeah, they didn't have a fare though, so they were just kind of cruising for trade, I suppose.
Just like Uber. So
yeah.
They're Uber.
Yeah.
A bike
app,
Uber.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing well?
Really good.
I think so.
They're
looking for drivers, I guess.
Riders.
No, they're
riders.
Looking for people to actually
more?
Drive the bike. I can't say ride the bikes because that's a customer, but I mean the people who are...
Oh. Okay.
Operators.
Yes,
yeah.
That's
the word.
Yes, I'm looking for more people. Actually, a fun story, but one of the drivers, one of the people that work for them, he's a life model. We used him for bicycle life drawing.
Did you have the bike in there as well?
No, we should
do
that
it
next
was
time.
So good.
Yeah.
Like sitting astride the.
Just lying on the pedal me.
Yeah.
Draw me like one of your pedal me's.
Oh. Yeah, it's really nice when because I sort of did cold turkey when I left London in 2013 and haven't really come back very much. So when I do come back, there's always like a lot of change has happened.
That was going to be one of my questions. Was, what are the differences
yeah.
since you left? And because it hasn't been that long. Well, 5 years now.
Yeah, 5 years. The cycle superhighways, Blackfriars Road, because I lived in Waterloo on the cut. Well, I was living in London and that Blackfriars Road was a complete kind of urban desert. And now it's got this cycleway in it, which is great. And I think I rode the one on the south, on the embankment,
yeah.
kind of east-west
yeah.
superhighway.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah,
it's
that's
really
good.
It's
but,
so nice.
So there's good stuff happening, but I gather there's a bit of bike lash against these things. That it seems like the current mayor is not quite so enthusiastic about confronting the antis. I think he kind of is,
yeah.
what I gather, he's even sort of in favour of it in theory, but doesn't want to fight the fight, doesn't want to expend his political capital to make it happen.
I don't think he rides a bike, does he?
I don't think that should matter.
No,
you're right, but it would make him more empathetic, or
yeah.
he would be one of us,
but
he's not one of us, and that's why he's kind of like straddling the fence, being like, I need to make everyone happy, when it's like, actually, this is one of those Jeanette Sadiq Khan moments where it's like, no, you have to force the people who are complaining into realizing, no, this is wrong. The only way our city is going to reduce congestion and get rid of air pollution is to introduce viable cycle lanes for people to use.
But don't you think it's more powerful when that argument comes from someone who isn't a habitual cyclist, but they've basically got it, they understand it.
Yeah.
But that
for
seems
sure.
to rarely happen. Peter Walker,
yeah.
one of the things in the guy who wrote that book called Bike Nation, have you had him on the...
We haven't
podcast.
Yet. Peter Walker.
Peter
if you're
Walker.
Listening, I don't know if he listens. We can tweet him.
He's been on the bike show. You can check it out. Last April, I think. But anyway, he said that it's still too much reliant on having a mayor or some city leader who is enthusiastic about cycling. It's not something that just makes sense
mm-hmm.
to the people running the city in the way
transport
that we think
planners.
It should.
Mm.
And that's as long as you're dependent on individuals and their own passion and commitment, then I think it's on shaky ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my fear. But it's definitely, I mean, so much more cycling. I mean, I'm kind of smiling at everyone who's on a bike. Like, so people think there's this mad guy walking around London, kind of, hi, hi. Because it happened to many. You smile at everyone.
Oh, yeah, you're like,
bike.
Oh, there you are. Oh, I didn't think you'd be doing this. Well done.
It reminds me of how it used to be in the late 80s and 90s when I sort of started cycling all around London. Because I grew up in London. And that's sort of when I started cycling all around London. And you would greet each other. Or a wave or something like that. Or just an acknowledgement
yeah.
kind of nod. But now, you know, you'd be crazy to do that in London.
I get it. I do it a bit. Yeah, I get it in Leytonstone, where I live, which is very east-east. And I don't see many cyclists around there. So when I do, we're like... give each other a really odd look where it's like, but we want to maybe say hi, but then we're too embarrassed or it's a bit weird. So now we're in that weird zone. I think that's a very London thing. Where it's like,
just on the outskirts.
You want to engage, but also you're too, not scared, but it's like, that's not what you do in London.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of, people have just got to cross that threshold. There's lots of ways. I mean, the Boris bikes are quite good for doing that, weren't they? That anyone could just hop on and give it a go. You didn't have to have a bike. And I think a lot of people don't realise that having a bike in a city is actually quite a hassle. Because you've got to store it somewhere, it's going to take up space.
They get stolen all the time.
Everybody's living in such small flats upstairs and all this kind of stuff. They don't want this oily monster in their hallway, do they? I mean, unless you really take the plunge and then you just live in a house full of a billion bikes, which is
so
probably
what
we all did.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the dockless schemes?
Yeah, well, I saw those around and I thought, what is that crap bike? Like, who is riding that crap bike?
And then you're like, there it is again!
There's
a glitch in the matrix.
And then I realised it was one of these dockless bikes.
Yeah.
The one with the metal, like red metal wheels. I mean, how do they ride? Are they plastic wheels? Okay.
Alex wants to do a test.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I'm right.
I've ridden the Urbo one, which are green.
Oh, there's more.
Yeah,
there's three different ones.
There's a
yellow.
Yellow, I've ridden one of those as well.
Mobike and...
Ofo. Oh, no. Urbo. Barclo Bico.
I don't know.
We should have done a race, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should have one each.
This should be like
and
a podcast.
Also, we should have seen who got challenged the most at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've ridden... Oh, Urbo. My Urbo one's quite funny was... My friend had used one. And it was like, let's ride it to the pub and then we can get trashed and get public transport home. And they'd already used theirs and already actually had an account. So guided me getting my account set up, got to the bikes where they were all kind of, some of them had fallen over at Leytonstone Station. And I immediately unlocked mine. And then my friend who'd already used the app couldn't unlock it. And we tried for about half an hour trying all different bikes while I just kind of cycled around him like, are you ready yet?
My clock's running.
Yeah, and I got charged and like waiting for them to... And then we had to give up. And then I actually like tweeted them and Instagrammed them and they were pretty good at getting back to me. But obviously couldn't work out why on earth.
Weird.
And you just think, that's it now. Not probably going to use it again.
But is it one of these things where you think you're paying to use a bicycle, but actually... you're supplying them with a load of interesting data about yourself that they will then sell to someone else who will now know where you've been. I mean, is that the
that
way
these
everything kind of
things
now.
Go?
That doesn't
really
I was just
going to
say, that's
me.
Everything.
No, that's everything, but is this just another one?
Or
is the business model based around kind of getting money in from the hire? I mean, how much does it cost to ride one?
It wasn't very expensive. You just paid for what you rode.
So like a pound an hour or...
I think I paid £1.50 to do like laps of Leytonstone car park for half an hour.
Yeah.
So, and then I used
money well spent.
Yeah, it was fun. I had fun. The bike's terrible, but and I used an Ofo, but I used it in the snow.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't been cycling because I rode fixed and I was a bit too.
A snowfo.
A snowfo. Yeah, and I just started skidding on it. I was just going down the road like yeah. But the best thing is you just get off. Luck it, and I was like, yeah. Not my problem.
Because that was the first hire bike that I ever saw in Berlin. Was the Deutsche Bahn one that was dockless, and that was way before Velib came in France. Yeah, it was quite weird. You just sort of left them around. But Berlin is a really spacious city, and there's loads of space to leave a load of junk around the place. But it does seem as though London is not as spacious as Berlin, and you know these things could end up cluttering up the place.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about that all the time. They're like, have you seen the Douglas Bike graveyard? And you're like, yeah, I've been to the Netherlands, so.
But it looks like that there, so.
But then let's talk about parked cars, you know,
look at graveyard. The space thing.
So should we talk about your book?
Yes, yeah. Please.
So why is West best?
Well,
what I thought.
West is best. I wouldn't say it's best. I'd say it's equal to the other two.
So what are the other two?
So so my books are called Lost Lanes, and they are books of bike rides in the countryside, basically, although the London and the South East one has got a couple of urban explorations. And they're very much the traditional style of a guide to where to go cycling, like that was produced in the 1890s and the 1900s and all the way through the 20th century. And the reason I decided to do a book like that myself was because in the 90s, I used to do day rides with friends and taking the train out of London and going for a ride and then coming back. And that was like on a Saturday or Sunday. And a group of us, maybe six or eight of us, would go out. And we used these books by a guy called Nick Cotton that were kind of, you know, they were great. They were great rides, but they weren't very appealing. They didn't make it look, you know, inviting and nice. But I knew that I liked cycling. And I just wanted some interesting places to go, and I wanted a route that I knew would work for my friends. So we used these books. And I thought that I could produce some beautiful bike rides and try and tell a story about them and try and produce some nice photography that would kind of evoke how nice it is just to go riding a bike in the countryside. Because I found that while I needed no invitation to go cycling, some of my friends or their friends or girlfriends or whatever would be like, why do I want to go for a bike ride rather than do any of the other things we could do this weekend? So I'd have to come up with some story about why this bike ride was amazing and you can't miss it because we're going to go and have oysters in this shack on the beach. Or we're going to visit eight different kinds of windmill. Or
it's a pub ride.
Or we're going to go to these three different incredible pubs. So basically try and produce rides that had a sort of theme or a story. And try and get people to take their bikes out of the town centre, city centre, and go cycling. And that was the London and the South East one. That was all about like hopping on the train out to the countryside and doing the loop and come back. And then the Wales one was about Wales and the border counties in England. And then this one's about the West Country, which is my definition of the West Country is from like Stonehenge and Avebury. It's basically where the first book stopped.
I see. You're just kind of mapping out areas that happened. So this is part four.
So this is book three.
Oh, three.
So yeah. So this one goes from kind of Avebury and Stonehenge in Wiltshire, Salisbury Plain, that area, all the way down to Land's End, and then north as far as the M4, and that because I had to kind of draw a line somewhere.
Yeah, mapped out.
So it's got good rides out of Bristol, Exeter, Bath. You know, that kind of area, Froome, because you know there's quite a lot of people who ride bikes around there. I mean, it's got hilly down there, so people have to, you know, gird themselves for a few hills. Because compared to that, the London, the South East is so flat.
Yeah, Griff just came back from spending time in Devon over the weekend, and he said he has to get new wheels now because his rims are concave from all the braking he was doing.
Wow.
I was like, mate, don't break. Like, just go. Descend.
There's a quote I've got in there from a cycling guidebook published in 1897, which says, if one is to ride a bicycle in Devon, one must be prepared to work. totally true. It's brutal, but you don't have to go fast. You know, you can walk up the hills.
Yeah.
I do some of them in Cornwall. 30%, that sort of thing. I'm not riding up that.
Crawl up it.
I'm crazy.
Brutal.
Yeah.
So do you have plans to do...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
To the entire country.
If this one sells okay, then there'll be a logic to do another one.
Cool.
I think there's probably Midlands, Heart of England type of thing. I'm not quite sure whether it should be Midlands or Heart of England.
Heart of England sounds better.
I think so, but then apparently
it was
people,
very English. So,
yeah.
You know,
the heart beating strong.
But people who live
like
in the Midlands like to. Are kind of quite patriotic about the Midlands, and they think that Heart of England is a snobbish euphemism because people can't bear to say in the Midlands because it sounds drab to an outsider. So I'm stepping all over mines and they're exploding left, right, centre here.
Something went in my eye, yeah.
Not going to be doing another book at all. But obviously, then
back,
there's the north of England, which is, you know, cycling paradise, isn't it? I mean, the Lake District, Yorkshire, probably two books there.
I need to know what your favourite pub was in this book.
Ooh, good question. There's a really nice pub just outside Exeter that you can only get to by walking or cycling.
Cool.
And that is called the Turf Locks Inn, I think, or Hotel. And
I'll put a link below.
I've got a whole page of best for pubs.
Yeah, because I was like, I like pubs, I like drinking
spikes. The Compasses, which is near Salisbury. So everyone should go to Salisbury because there's really good cycling there, out on the River Wylie and around there. There's some good pubs in Dartmoor.
Is this book good for cider drinkers?
Yeah.
I like cider.
Yeah.
Thirsty.
Yeah, you've got the Somerset, so there's some rides on the Somerset levels and then into South Somerset. And that's, I mean, one of the nice things about doing this sort of book is that, you know, I know bits of the countryside everywhere from having ridden through it on long rides, but I don't know everywhere. But when you do like a book like this, you've got to go everywhere. You've got to check everywhere out. And so you end up finding some places that you didn't know existed. So South Somerset, just the area north of Sherborne, it's really beautiful, really, really nice. There's some amazing hills there.
How do you decide on what determines a ride? Like start and finish? If you're doing all this kind of recon exploration, do you start to piece things together or is it kind of apparent?
Well, I try to make them all start at the railway station because I don't want people like putting their bikes in cars and having to drive to car parks and all that stuff. Not all of them are worked that way because the cuts in the 1960s means that North Devon and Cornwall have got no trains anymore, so it hasn't quite worked to do everything. Generally, if there's an area that I think is really beautiful, has got some lovely lanes and has got something interesting at the end of it, interesting pub or a place to stay or a place to eat, or particularly interesting ruin or old buildings or villages or a a coastal road. I mean, the lanes, ultimately, if this is just an absolutely gorgeous lane that goes on for a few miles, I'll try and work a route into that. And they're all loops. And I also, I've joined a bunch of them together, so you can see on the map, so you could do, like, several days. Like, you could start here and kind of go all the way up there and then come back. So you could join a few of the rides together for a kind of mini tour. And for me, cycling's not so much about trying to get a really long way and say, I've cycled, you know, to Land's End, from Land's End to John O'Groats. It's more about trying to acquaint yourself with a place. And it doesn't mean you necessarily have to go the most direct route. If it's an interesting route and it's pleasurable to ride and you're seeing new and interesting things all along the way, if it's a loop, it doesn't matter. I don't think
that's interesting.
So there are a few, yeah,
it's
there
a
are
different
few gaps.
Vibes, this book. It's not about
it's our vibe,
distance.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's about
yeah.
enjoying your surroundings. And I'm
thrilled at how kind of this whole adventure cycling thing is taking off, because adventure cycling is cycle touring, rebranded.
Everything rebrands.
But, you know, the idea of sleeping in a bivy bag
yeah.
is now incredibly aspirational, and people want to do that sort of thing. Bikes with fat tyres and luggage carrying is what people want to have now. And I think that's great. I think they're much more usable bikes for all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's a bit depressing how the bike industry is so tied to, like, the professional bike racing industry. And so we just get given, as recreational or utility cyclists, kind of adapted versions of a bike that Tour de France winner might ride or whatever, which is just not what we need. You know, I have no use for like a 52 tooth chain ring. I have no use for it at all.
But I think that's changing, especially like with Bespoke coming up, where more people have an opportunity to build their own bikes. And even with your book, Jenny, you could make your own bikes. And I think more and more that's happening with cycling, is we're not having to rely on these manufacturers or brands as much anymore.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are some things that have changed in technology that have made this whole adventure cycling thing kind of possible, like disc brakes. It means you no longer have to worry about whether your wheels are a certain size or not, because you're not braking on the rim anymore. You can have a 650B wheel one week and a 700C wheel the next week, and you can have fat tyres or 28mm tyres, but it's still reliant on a disc brake setup, and that is a new bit of technology that's come in. One thing that worries me a little bit is all the different standards that are coming in now, with like axle spacing and hub spacing, and things don't seem to be as compatible. And like, you can't just like take a wheel and like put it on a bike. It's like, does this fit? Is this the right millimeter? I mean, you must, Jenny, that must be what you get all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, no, not so much, because still the bikes that come in the workshop are pretty, still from the 70s, 80s, a lot of vintage bikes. We are slowly starting to see these fancier bikes come in, and it's a headache. And I don't understand why. I mean, I understand why the industry is doing it. It's because they want to make money. It's atrocious. We throw away so much in terms of the planned obsolescence that's worked into the bike industry. And then now they're coming out with these different standards, and I'm just like, can you not? Like, can't we just agree? It's 130 for now. Like, why are we? I know why we're going wider, is because there's different disciplines. So everything's getting more and more specialized. But you're right. They try to sell what the pros are using to punters, and it's like this whole press fit bottom bracket headache thing that I'm currently dealing with. I'm just like, that belongs on a pro's bike, because they throw their bikes away. That's where press fit belongs. They do not belong on a fucking commuting bike. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah, so
yeah,
that's
no,
why
I think I can go a certain way down that road with you, but then I do think that there are some things which are big improvements. I mean, disc brakes are the case where they're being forced onto the pros.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When they don't really need them, because, like,
they
you're trying
stop.
To go fast, you don't need to stop, do you,
stop.
Really? but because they are what people are riding in the kind of amateur or you know, recreational utility bikes, then the pros bikes have got to be made to look a bit more like that. Otherwise, I feel like people are not getting the bike that Chris Froome's got, or the bike that's evolved out of the bike that Chris Froome's got. But then again, I do think disc brakes make a lot of sense.
I do like the wheel compatibility, the changing that you can
yeah.
have, because that's actually what I'm thinking of doing on my next bike.
Alex, I'm going to be hawking my books in Look Mum No Hands in a minute. That business, that thing, feels like a kind of, I don't know, just this wonderful thing that I can't imagine not existing in London for cycling. And how long has it been? It's not...
8 years.
8 years.
Oh, 8 years this month.
Right.
2010, April. They don't actually know the date they officially opened. No one can remember.
Talk about fixture. And is it going well?
Yeah, Old Street's doing well. We have a sister site in Whitechapel, which is doing okay. We're actually going to start closing there at the weekends because it's really dead around there. But that's a really nice cafe by the people at Look Mum No Hands. Because what we champion and what we've been doing at Look Mum No Hands is good coffee, good beer, and having a space for bikes and cycling. So we screen live cycling. Got Paris-Roubaix on Sunday and all day today.
Ooh.
I've had people like, can I book a table? And I'm like, no.
First come, first serve.
Yeah, we don't do table reservations.
You also got a massive bike workshop as well.
Yeah, and so we have a bike workshop, and we recently took on Mario from Soho Bikes. Soho Bikes is closed, so we now have a mountain bike
expert.
So we get loads more mountain bikes in. I don't like mountain bikes. Well, they're so big.
The
handlebars are really annoying.
They're
keep walking into
fun.
Them.
You gotta give it a go.
No, they look like fun. It's just, yeah. I have to work next to them now. So anybody who drops a mountain bike off, I'm the one, like, hanging
first
out
thing.
With it.
And do you feel that Look Mum No Hands has been imitated and copied and has inspired other places all around the country? Because I certainly get that impression that the idea of doing a bicycle workshop, cafe, event space, bar thing is really taken off, and people see the possibility when they come to Look Mum No Hands.
I think it's quite interesting. I get Google alerts, and we got one recently for the space in Leicester that's going to be opening up, which is going to be a cycle cafe, and they were like just flat out on the press piece, like, Look Mum No Hands. And a lot of them are like that. They're like, we're opening a new space, like, Look Mum No Hands. We weren't the first cycle cafe, but I think we're one of the longest standing. Quite a lot have kind of bloomed and then disappeared for various reasons, including rent. But I think what's interesting about Look Mum is we do champion being a good cafe first. And it's similar to like a pub where you have all different types of people in there. You know, we don't have just cyclists, and we have a lot of non-cyclists, old and young. People just like to hang out there. And I think that's what's really, really important about the space.
So you've got to be a really good cafe and bar before you're doing anything else with bikes.
Yeah.
Because people won't stick with you just because of the bikes.
No, because we do events. Well, that's what I look after. And the fact that you can turn up and have a really good beer and really good food, it makes them want to come back. You know, you could put on a really, really amazing event and get served a shitty Stella. And you are like, I'm all right, I'm going to go somewhere else. But I think what's interesting about maybe London, or that's always been like the standard. You should always champion really good stuff. And that's happening with coffee and beer all the time, where these places are opening that sell really good food and drink. And that's not amazing anymore. That's just what you should do.
Well, London doesn't actually have any shops anymore. It just has cafes
Costas everywhere.
I mean, that's one thing I noticed when on my annual visit. It's just like,
yeah.
where are the shops?
Well, no, the shops are cafes.
I can see a lot of cafes.
The shops are bars.
Yeah.
They're combined now.
Mm.
You can't just be a shop space. I don't think it works. So with us, yeah, we sell products. We have a new cap out, the Europa cap. Which you were saying is kind of interesting, is a slight political statement.
I want to.
Oh, this is a pro-EU cycling cap.
Yeah.
Right. And have you taken any heat from that?
My favourite was the minute I posted it on Instagram, someone wrote loser cap. They didn't even spell loser right as well. It was like, oh, here come the idiots.
Oh, well, I have to put in a word for the 48% socks
yes.
that I wear, which I think from Velotastic. They're like blue sock with golden stars on.
Yeah, and that's what if you don't know, our Europa cap is a blue cap with a ring of yellow stars like the European flag. Okay, so yeah, we're doing way more events now, and I just champion supporting women cycling, or just generally anything that doesn't involve mammals.
Well, that was something that...
I mean, Paris-Roubaix, that's...
But
that's
we're
going to
screen
Paris-Roubaix.
I mean, we're
still
going to do
mammals,
that.
But you're expanding
yeah.
the remit to include people who are generally underrepresented in the cycling world.
Well, that's when I heard, when I first heard the Wheel Suckers podcast, it was kind of during a period when the bike show was having a fallow time due to me being overcommitted with other stuff. And I was really pleased to hear you doing it because it was really funny and interesting, but also because it wasn't just a load of male cycling journalists talking about professional bike racing. I mean, you do touch on professional bike racing, but you come at cycling from your own angles, which is very different from all the other cycling podcasts. So that's why it's nice to kind of introduce listeners to the bike show to you guys. You've got like, how, God, quite, you've been productive.
We have 100 million subscribers.
How many episodes have you got? Like, because people, it's always nice.
We don't number them because I just cannot be asked.
But it's always nice when you discover.
15?
I think I'm around 20 something.
20? I have no idea.
When you discover a new podcast that you like, or there's a new to you, it's always really nice when you know, oh yeah, there's like 40 shows that I can go and listen to. And then you binge listen to them, and he's like, I don't like that podcast so much.
Yeah.
Actually, at all.
Overdose.
I think our earlier stuff, the tech's not that good,
no,
but
we're getting
better.
There.
We're getting better.
The tech is secondary to the content.
We've
always
had a lot of good people. Oh, we did a survey. So we're going to release the results of that survey soon. But
yeah,
the biggest comment that we got was, can you improve your sound?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We did get told we laugh too much.
So, so tell us some of the things that you're most proud of having covered on Suckers.
Rebecca Moore.
Rebecca Moore.
Was she?
Do you know who Rebecca Moore is?
Sorry.
She's a porn star.
She's a porn star, but
okay,
she rides a bike.
I'm glad I said no, and I didn't think, oh, yeah, yeah, I know Rebecca.
Yeah, I had one guy, well, I'm like, oh, my God. He's like, oh, I love buses and taxis. And I was like, I have no idea what that is.
Okay, so come on, tell me more about Rebecca Moore.
She's so nice. We're really
scared.
What's
the connection to Wheel Suckers?
Ah, well, there's an amazing Twitter account called Porn Peddlers. And it's a cycle club of people that work in the adult entertainment industry. So they started
They ride bikes.
And they started following Look Mom No Hands. And I was like, this is hilarious. Then I told Jenny, and Jenny was like, if that following me? Approached them. There's a guy called Chris. And Chris was like, you should talk to Rebecca. She's one of our best
ambassadors.
She's a very popular porn star.
She came to London. We were so nervous. I had like 2 cups of coffee, and then I was like, that was a bad idea. And then she came and was so funny and really fun. And we played, what was the game? Sex toy
bike tool? Bike tool or sex tool. And then so I listed sex toys or bike product toys.
Yeah.
And she had to guess which one was which.
Excellent.
And I don't remember the tally.
She didn't do very well. I found some really fun, obscure ones. Like Big Boy, what was it? Big Boy 2 or something.
Yeah,
that was a pump.
Like
a pump. I think that's the fun, like, that's a very funny, silly episode.
Yeah.
But I like that we got to interview Ayesha McGowan.
Yeah.
She's going to be the first African-American pro cyclist. She was over from, she was in New York, now she's in New Jersey, I can't remember. But we interviewed
she's
her
in
on
South now.
We interviewed her on Karen Hartley's boat.
Yeah.
And that was just like really interesting to hear her thoughts, and it actually helped change my marketing strategy at Look Mom No Hands.
All right.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So in what way?
To include more people of colour. Mm-hmm. So I have Jules Walker, Lady Fellow as one of our models for our products, because I thought representation is important, and hearing Ayesha say it, you know, I was thinking, what can I do as a brand? You know, you just think, show and represent more people.
Well, that's also something really nice about Wheel Suckers, is that you have, well, you're both women, obviously, and you get a lot of women on the show, but it's not a women's cycling podcast, which I might listen to, but I listen to Wheel Suckers because it's really funny and really interesting, and it happens to follow your interest, and I guess you're following your noses, because that's what you do with the podcast, isn't it? If I find something interesting, I'll bring it on the podcast. If you find something interesting, you'll bring it on the podcast. And you could definitely get a different angle on cycling, and particularly women cycling. I mean, it's such a crappy term, but like women cycling, maybe that's better. Women cycling is something that I've noticed becoming more prominent and more visible in media and social media. There are more stars in the firmament. There are like I'm not going to list them all off, but we have Emily Chappell on the show, Lee Craigie and the Adventure Syndicate people, those hardcore nutters, and Sarah Hammond and people like that. But it does seem that is something that wasn't around, like when the bike show started. There wasn't women talking about their cycling as much. There were still lots of women cycling, but I don't know if it's to do with the times have changed or whether it's just now that we've got social media and there's so much more about the web, anyone can start something, and if it gets popular, you start seeing it pretty quickly. You're not confined to like institutions that change very slowly, which might be a British Cycling or might be the CTC or whatever, or magazines that are kind of institutions in their own way. Like there's all the cycling magazines that will, you know, change at the pace of a dinosaur. You know, you can just set something up like a podcast, like a magazine, like a blog, like whatever. And suddenly you're seeing things that you didn't used to see before, which I think is really inspiring. And yeah.
I do want to ask you though, because we made a decision to not say that this was a women's podcast.
Yeah.
And I think if you'd seen that, you maybe wouldn't have connected or listened to it. Because yeah. I kind of was really enjoying when we first launched it, that we were like, the Look Mum No Hands and London Bike Kitchen podcast. And just didn't really say anything else. I kind of even avoided saying who we were, because I kind of wanted to trick people into listening to a women's focused podcast. Because I think when...
Surprise!
Yeah, it was like...
We're women!
All of us, generally, are women. Gutted, you know, because I get it all the time with our Twitter, like, hey guys, hey lads,
yeah.
Oi mate,
yeah.
And I'll be like, I mean, I call myself Alex, and then that tricks people as well.
That tricks people.
A lot of the time I have a meet, you know, and they'll be like, I'm here to meet Alex, and I'll be like, it's me, and they're like, I know what you were doing!
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I used to do the same sort of thing. I mean, obviously not tackling such a big issue of disparity in society, but I used to lure people into the bike show with stuff about pro cycling and then give them a load of cycle touring and me camping out in a bivy bag on the top of the Chilterns or whatever. But they wouldn't necessarily come to listen to that, but they'll come and listen to an interview with David Miller or whatever. But then I like quickly turn that off. Here we are in the bivy bag.
Yeah.
And you have to do a bit of that. But yeah, I think to call yourself like a women's cycling podcast is to risk losing
audience straight away.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to Women's Hour. I mean, that's on BBC Four or no, Radio Four, which is good sometimes. And it doesn't put me off that it's called Women's Hour. Women's Hour. You were on it, weren't you?
I was on it.
Yeah.
I don't listen to it though. So.
I think the just best thing is just to do it that way. Do it the way that you believe, and people will find out if they like it. But if you label it, I mean, you could just go down so many different niches and things like that, couldn't you?
Well, and the reason I said it was because we're big fans of Casquette magazine, which, are you aware of?
Yes.
Yeah, and Danielle set that up, and that doesn't anywhere say that it's a women's magazine. And she said she got emails from people like, I loved your magazine, blah, 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 like from men, you know, and she was kind of doing this similar thing where it's like, just producing something that happens to just be all about women, and I'm not saying anything, I'm not making it like a statement. And I just kind of, I was inspired by what she was doing, because the word cycling, you now have to say women's cycling to be talking about women.
Yes.
Because the word cycling is just always
assumed
attached
to be male.
Yeah. We can't fight that, I don't think. But that's kind of from where we are.
I think that is changing. I think it's not fast enough, but I think it's changing. And I think, you know, if you look back through history, you know, there's always been everyone cycling, hasn't there? But yeah, it has become a bit, I think that long extinction of cycling that happened in the 60s and 70s, which just left a kind of hardcore rump of sort of racers and nutters cycling. But I mean, there's a woman in my town who you should have on show. She used to race in the Isle of Man TT on mopeds and stuff like that. And she's got amazing bikes, but she's in her 70s now. So there's always been these great characters.
Yeah, send them our way. If anybody listening knows someone rad that we should interview, send them our way.
Yeah.
No, we can fight for it with you, Jack.
Yeah, definitely.
Who'll get there first?
Yeah, and if you come across any interesting men, Just send them to the bike show. Okay, don't bother.
Right, I think we need to wrap up now.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's been a pleasure to join forces.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. This weird combined baby podcast. Bike baby.
More than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, we'll come to Wales and we'll go camping and do it again.
Yes.
Yeah, find Emily. She's out there somewhere.
And if you like what we do, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe.
And share.
We always have a secret mission. I don't know if you do this on your podcast, but do you know somebody who likes cycling and podcasts? Then tell them about our podcast.
They'll like it.
It's better than the bike show.
Sometimes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.